This is DW News live from Berlin. Voters in Uzbekistan head to the polls in presidential elections. But with little real opposition, the incumbent president is expected to secure a landslide victory. Also on the show, Colombia's most wanted drug trafficker and gang leader is captured. After a decade on the run, the man known as Otoniel is seized by the Colombian army in an operation near the border with Panama. And in the Bundesliga, the Bayern bandwagon rolls on. The champions in free-scoring form again as they brush aside Hoffenheim. I'm Nick Spicer. Welcome to the program. Voters in Uzbekistan are heading to the polls to vote in presidential elections. Incumbent Shavkat Mirziyoyev is widely expected to win a landslide victory. Voters can choose only between the incumbent and four other candidates loyal to the government. Mirziyoyev took power in 2016, promising democratic reforms and respect for human rights. He's pledging more to come, though his critics say he hasn't done enough. Our correspondent, Emily Sherwin, met with an opposition activist in Samarkand, who says he's been persecuted by the government.
Election posters may be sparse in Uzbekistan, but they show that the presidential race is on. Candidates from five parties are running to lead the country. But critics say only the president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, has a real chance to win, and many are predicting a landslide.
All these parties are fully controlled by the government. For all the years of their existence, they haven't made any demands for democratic change. All you have to do is criticize the government a tiny bit, and you've already crossed the red line. People in our country aren't just scared to say critical things, they're even afraid to think them.
Opposition activist Mahmoud Davranov feels sure he has crossed one of those lines. He's convinced that he's being followed. While we were interviewing him, the small street he lives on suddenly became unusually busy. Several men apparently fixing internet cables appeared. Earlier this year, Mahmoud Davranov and several others tried to start a new social democratic opposition party, but the authorities said they didn't have enough valid signatures to register. Davranov says he's been arrested several times, and now ahead of the elections, his SIM card and his internet connection have been switched off, even though he insists he paid all his bills.
At night, they switch off our electricity. I don't have any reception. I can't call anyone for help. No one can reach me. I'm completely off the grid. Why do they do that? Because now I'm truly afraid.
Mahmoud's hometown of Samarkand is also the hometown of the previous president, Islam Karimov, who died 5 years ago. For over 25 years, Uzbekistan was ruled by an authoritarian leader, and it's only since his death that the country has slowly begun to open up and change. Uzbekistan's current leader, Mirziyoyev, was a key figure in the authoritarian regime. But as president, he has loosened the state's iron grip on citizens and opened up the country and its economy. And his campaign is promising further changes.
We, as the party of the president, understand that we need to have an opposition, that we need constructive criticism, but we ask that things remain within the existing framework of the law.
It's still not easy to speak openly about the president in Uzbekistan, but many seem optimistic about him having a second term.
The president has already proven that he's a good manager, a good politician. We have good relations with our neighboring countries now. For normal people, nothing has changed. Our salaries haven't gone up. On the other hand, more businesses have been opened.
People have started talking about their rights when they used to be silent. Now people are more active. But opposition activist Mahmoud Davranov feels he is being silenced. He wants the president and his government to move beyond democratic rhetoric and to allow real democratic change for Uzbekistan.
And Emily Sherwin is covering today's voting in Uzbekistan for us. She sent us this update from Samarkand.
Voters across Uzbekistan are voting at polling stations like this one. And one of the candidates on the ballot is the current president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev. In the previous election in 2016, he won nearly 90% of the vote, and experts are predicting a similar landslide victory this time around as well. On the one hand, critics say that that's because there's not much of a democratic tradition in Uzbekistan, which was under autocratic rule for such a long time. And on the other hand, many of the people I've been speaking to really seem to believe in Mirziyoyev's promises of change. In his presidential campaign, he's been promising to really double down on improving people's lives and also to focus on human rights. Uzbekistan's human rights record in the past was abysmal, and the current president made quite a few changes, but they're a bit of a mixed bag. For example, on the one hand, he released dozens of political prisoners, but many remain in prison. Today, the media is now allowed to be more critical, but for example, there's a new law that has just been introduced this year, which means that it's criminalized to actually criticize the president, and several bloggers have been arrested. But I think many of the people here really hope that this next presidential term can continue the change that has been begun, and that Uzbekistan will continue to open up to the world, including economically.
Colombia's most wanted drug lord and gang leader is behind bars. Soldiers captured Dairo Antonio Usaga in an operation near the border with Panama. He's accused of drug trafficking, murder, and kidnapping.
Colombia's most wanted, caught in his jungle hideout. Dairo Antonio Usaga, known as Otoniel, eluded authorities for years.
Alias Otoniel.
Otoniel was the most feared narco-trafficking leader in all the world. A murderer of police officers, soldiers, social leaders, a recruiter of children. This is only paralleled by the fall of Pablo Escobar in the 1990s. The operation to capture Otoniel involved more than 500 soldiers and special forces. The narco-trafficker is accused of spending decades building the so-called Gulf Clan cartel, controlling much of the smuggling of cocaine through northern Colombia. Over those years, he allied himself with rebel groups, both right and left-wing, to ensure his survival in the jungle. He allegedly oversaw an army of assassins who kept northern Colombia in fear as they fought for control of lucrative smuggling routes. Capturing Otoniel is a victory for the state and the rule of law against the biggest threat in Colombia, drug trafficking. That may be, but Otoniel's arrest comes amid a surge in the production of coca, the raw material used to make cocaine, to new levels, despite decades of efforts to eradicate the drug trade.
And here are some other stories making news around the world. Several thousand migrants, including families with young children from Haiti, South and Central America, have pushed through police lines in southern Mexico on their way to the American border. The number of migrants trying to gain entry into the United States is hitting new records. A powerful earthquake has struck Yulan County in northeastern Taiwan. The tremors were felt across much of the country, including the capital Taipei. There have been no reports of injuries or major damage. The casino group MGM Resorts has auctioned off 11 of its Picasso artworks in Las Vegas. The auction fetched $109 million. MGM says it wants to make its global art collection displayed in its casinos and hotels more diverse and inclusive, with more works by women, LGBTQ artists, people of color, and those with disabilities. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says an explosion in the capital, Kampala, was a terrorist act and has vowed to hunt down those responsible. The blast occurred on Saturday at an eatery in a popular suburb. One person died and at least seven more were injured. This comes after years of relative peace in Uganda, but evokes memories of a deadly 2010 terror bombing that killed dozens of people. And for more on this, I'm joined by DW correspondent Julius Mugumbwa in Kampala. Julius, what more do we know about yesterday's attack?
What we actually know is that the number of people who died are actually two. Police reports that two people have been confirmed dead and seven are receiving treatment in the hospital. The police and the military are heavily deployed. People are not allowed to access the area. It's been cordoned off as a crime scene. The police is doing its investigations. We saw earlier the bomb squad on ground. No official report has been released, but what we know from President Yoweri Museveni is already describing this as a possible terrorist attack. He has not yet told us who did it, and we look forward to his report. We look forward to the police briefing later.
Well, yes, you're just saying the president is saying it's a possible terrorist attack, but we're not quite clear who has done it. But are there any indications, are there any precedents to suggest it might be this or that group or person?
Indeed, there's no one who has come out to claim responsibility. For instance, in the past, the Al-Shabaab, who are known to be linked to the Al-Qaeda terror group, they came out and claimed responsibility of killing more than 70 people in 2010. This time around, they have not come out to claim responsibility. But again, there could be possible links that could link them to this. But since the police is trying to put together pieces and bits to try to get to the very bottom of this, we look forward to what they will tell us. And if in any time from now, any terror organization will come and claim that. But not forgetting that we have previously received alerts from the United Kingdom, but police somehow downplayed this alert. But what we know, the police, the military, and other security organizations have put together efforts, and they've promised Ugandans that anytime they will tell us who is responsible, and the possibility of averting a likelihood of the same thing happening again.
Okay, DW correspondent Julius Mugambwa in Kampala. Thanks for that. Time for sports now. And in the Bundesliga, Hoffenheim were on good form as they traveled to Bavaria. But like Leverkusen before them, they were no match for a Bayern side brimming with firepower. The hosts didn't even miss the presence of coach Julian Nagelsmann, who's in isolation after catching COVID-19.
Bayern were full of confidence after a big win over Benfica in the Champions League under caretaker manager Dino Topmüller. But visitors Hoffenheim were also on form, having beaten Cologne 5-0 last week. Serge Gnabry had already had a goal rolled out by the time he opened the scoring on 16 minutes. Then it was Robert Lewandowski's turn. Thomas Müller sent the ball towards the pole, who struck with no mercy into Baumann's net. It was one of the hits of the weekend. 2-0, a deserved score for Bayern heading into the break. Bayern left it late to add to their score. Substitute Maxime Choupo-Moting scored Bayern's third goal on 82 minutes. 5 minutes later, Dayot Upamecano set up Kingsley Coman for the fourth. Four goals for the second time in 3 days for assistant Topmüller. And Julian Nagelsmann is absolutely having his best COVID quarantine.
Sticking with German football, Dortmund remain 1 point behind Bayern in the table after they won 3-1 in Bielefeld. Dortmund's Jude Bellingham, scored the pick of the goals for the visitors. The young Englishman danced past three challengers and clipped the ball over goalkeeper Stefan Ortega to seal the points with Dortmund's third goal before taking the acclaim of the traveling fans. The saying goes, you're never more than a couple of meters away from a rat. But what about a cat? To answer that question, Washington, D.C. has conducted the first ever cat census in a major U.S. city. The cat count found that almost 200,000 felines roam the alleyways, backyards, and living rooms of the Capitol. To put that into perspective, almost 700,000 people live in the district. To find out how many kitties live in the city, volunteers surveyed households and set up special cameras to monitor nocturnal captivity. The cameras also filmed some of the city's other furry residents, including raccoons, foxes, and beavers. You're watching DW News live from Berlin. Up next is World Stories, looking back on some of our best reports from the past week. I'm Nick Spicer.